He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is 1/11/22, and this is the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. And I'm joined by chartered financial analyst for Gunderson Capital Management, Barry Kite. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning. Well, here we go again.
Whiplash. Yeah, whiplash right? Continues. I got a kink in my neck here. We got a weird day. The NASDAQ now is up 37 points, and the Dow is down 191 points. But I think we're probably in some kind of a hold mode here until we hear from our friend Jerome Powell, who he has the keys to the market this year.
Yeah, C-SPAN should have some good ratings today, right?
Yes, he definitely holds the keys to this market going forward. And it looks like, without doubt, it's going to be a rising interest rate environment that we're dealing with in 2022. We have not had that. We had it for a brief time in 2021. We saw how the long-duration stocks reacted back then. Now it looks like it's here to stay, this rising interest rate environment, and I don't see the long-duration stocks doing very well going forward. We'll get into that a little bit more here later on. S&P down 10. It's flirting with its 50-day moving average. The NASDAQ went below its 200-day moving average. I can't remember the last time that happened, but it did snap back there at the end of the day. And the Dow is also kind of flirting with its 50-day moving average. You have interest rates still today down just one basis point at 1.76. You've got gold up $6. You got silver up 8 cents. And last but not least, Bitcoin finally getting a little relief. It's up 1,000 to 41,753. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, 22 years now in the business, and Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst, certified financial planner. We have a mixed day going on here in the market today. Yesterday was crazy. That was a whiplash day where you had, I want to say the NASDAQ was down over 200, well over 200 at one point in time, and it was dangling below its 200-day moving average. I'd have to go back and look at the last time the NASDAQ traded below its 200-day moving average, which is considered a long-term moving average, and it's pretty significant when an asset class or a stock breaks that long-term moving average. The NASDAQ did yesterday, but then towards the end of the day recovered and regained it. Now it's fairly well above its 200-day moving average, but that's something to watch going forward. You know, like yesterday, once again, a major whiplash day in the market. The 10-year ended at 1.78. 1.78. We started the year at about 1.5. So we're up 28 basis points through the first 7 days of trading here in 2022. And that has made all the difference in the market here so far. Oil has also been moving back up again, and one of the better performing sectors here so far in 2022, along with the bank stocks, the financials, commodity, a few other areas of the market. Low PE, I guess, would be a common theme running through those different sectors. Well, let's see what else we have. We've got that everybody. I mean, tomorrow when that CPI comes out, and I got to believe that Jerome Powell will prepare us for it today a little bit, soften it, the blow, or maybe he knows it's going to come in a little bit milder than expected. But I got to believe that will be very much a watched report. 8:30 a.m. tomorrow, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, the most widely watched inflation index, will be reported. And then the very next day, on a Thursday at that same time, 8:30 a.m., we'll get the PPI data. And I got to believe the Fed already has a good idea of where it's going to come. And I don't think they're going to, you know, get any less aggressive after these numbers, Barry. I believe that their course is probably set on the rate hikes. And this will probably just confirm that. That's my take. What's your take?
Yeah, I think, you know, two things. I think certainly today is going to be, you know, read the Fed minutes and then listen to what gets said today. You know, today's going to be, you know, certainly a lot of political theater on both sides of the aisle. I think the one thing we'll hear most about is inflation, right? Because I think the inflation narrative is probably the most positive thing for Republicans to hit on, right, going into the midterms. And I think the Democrats are the most scared of inflation, right, in terms of that argument going into the midterms. So we're going to hear a ton about inflation, and then, of course, we can get the CPI report and the PPI report. And so those will, you know, I think those are going to, you know, and I don't know if we're going to get any surprises. I think we expect them to be high. I think if we actually got surprised, it'd probably be on the lower end. You know,
yeah,
it's certainly going to be, you know, I think that and you know, Fed members trading, you know, they're going to be the two biggest themes, right? Because I think there was one Fed governor, I think, recently who forgot that he placed a trade or something. So,
anyways,
there's a few, you know, I think those would be the two biggest topics, would be my guess, today. And it'll be a much different tone than we do when you read the Fed minutes. So.
Yeah. Goldman Sachs is calling for 4 rate hikes.
Right.
I saw Jamie Dimon today calling for 3 rate hikes in 2022. But I think it's fair to say that, you know, if you look back over the last 2 decades, we've had falling interest rates. We've been in a lower interest rate environment, which has been a very big win behind the back of stocks, especially long duration tech stocks, the biotech stocks. It's enabled all of these startups and SPACs and small biotechs to go public and everything like that. But now, you know, the wind has shifted. It's not coming from the south anymore. That nice warm wind coming from the equator. In fact, now it's a north wind that's kind of cold and chilly, and it's a rising interest rate environment. Now, Jamie Dimon was trying to play it down like, you know, we all saw this coming. There's nothing to worry about. But the bigger question is, you know, the Fed saw it coming but did nothing about it. I mean, they could have done something a lot earlier, and they didn't. And now here we are in 2022, and inflation has reared its ugly head, and there's a lot of bubbles building. We've been talking about the asset bubbles in the crypto space. That's coming undone. We were talking about the asset bubble in the EV space. That's coming undone. Man, those EV stocks, they're just getting clobbered here. And, you know, we've been talking so much about this whole theme of long-duration stocks. Do the same as long-duration bonds. When interest rates start to go up, they go down. They do not like a rising interest rate environment.
And the market doesn't like surprises. I mean, remember, I mean, just as you mentioned, Goldman Sachs thinks there's, you know, going to be 4 rate hikes. J.P. Morgan thinks 3. These numbers were all 2, right? If you remember, consensus was 2 just, you know, probably a month ago, maybe less than a month ago. With the first rate hike, you know, everyone thought the first rate hike was going to be around June, right? And so now we're talking about maybe March is in play. You know, I don't think you can get 4 rate hikes without one in March, right?
There's going to be one in March.
Yeah.
The March meeting. Now, in the meantime, Jamie Dimon was pretty optimistic. He says it's going to be volatile. And it's going to be critical, in my opinion, to not be in, you know, what worked in 2022 or 2020 for sure. That came to an end a year ago. And now the stuff that kind of worked last year is under pressure this year. You know, your software stocks and your higher PE types of stocks, which many reside in the tech sector. Even the semiconductors have come under some pressure here recently. It has now spread to that. But as we've been saying, there's many several sectors out there that will do well and fare well in a rising interest rate environment. Maybe that's why Jamie Dimon is so happy. His own stock should do well in 2022 because it's in one of those sectors that benefits. He probably welcomes a higher interest rate environment. Okay, we got a lot more to say when we come back on the sectors that are doing well right now. And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. What a turbulent ride it has been in the market for the last 6 weeks or so, I would say. It really got topsy-turvy when those Fed minutes came out. And there was a massive rotation and readjustment two portfolios that were heavily weighted in the high PE growth stocks. And that rushing sound you heard was money leaving those high PE growth stocks and moving into lower PE stocks that are in some of the lower PE sectors out there. And I'm talking about PE ratios in the 8 to 15 area, which leaves out a lot of popular stocks that don't fit in there anymore. That's not to say that there won't be some high PE stocks that do well, but investing in a portfolio of high PE stocks with the wind in your face of rising interest rates is not a very good idea. And also the bond market. What do you say about people that are invested, especially in longer-term bond funds, Barry, how vulnerable are they?
Yeah, you know, as we know, the two pieces of bond prices when you talk about interest rates are, you know, high. You know, bond prices move inversely with interest rates. So as interest rates go up, bond prices go down. And the other factor is this, you know, duration term or long duration. So the longer that bond is dated, so for example, a 1 year bond versus say a 30 year bond, if interest rates go up 1%, well, that 1 year bond is going to go down, but it's not going to go down near as much as that 30 year bond will.
Exactly,
and that lies the relationship of interest rates versus of long duration. So, you know, the formula, you know, simply is, you know, all else being equal, if your duration's 30 versus a duration of 1, interest rates go up 1%. Well, that 30-year bond, you know, that bond 30 with a 30 duration should be down 30%. That bond with the 1 duration should be down 1%. And there's a lot of other factors, but that's the primary issue. And with the stock, the thought is there is no expiration date, right? We expect them to go, to be around forever, right? And so exacerbate that duration, relationship there.
Yeah, so you got to be thinking in this environment to pull in your reins quite a bit, hold your horses. And, at one extreme, you have like a hardcore value fund, which will probably thrive in 2022. And down at the other extreme, you have these transformational, innovative types of funds that are investing in that kind of theme. And that's like the worst place you can be. And in an asset allocation, if you hold long duration bond funds, they're going to do a lot worse than short duration bond funds. And we continue to recommend that you own the individual bonds and hold them to maturity. Then you don't really have to worry about interest rates along the way. But you don't want to go too far out on the duration ladder either, even with corporate bonds. Our average is 6 to 7 years, somewhere in there. We sold one yesterday. That'll make some room for something we want to do with some hedging in that portfolio. All right. Well, a former Fed Reserve President, New York Federal Reserve President, Bill Dudley, he used to be on the talk shows a lot. He says that the Fed needs to boost rates faster than markets currently expect. Well, the market is already expecting them to move even faster. Like you say, I mean, they were pricing in maybe one or two rate hikes. And I can remember, you go back about a year ago, and they weren't talking about any rate hikes till 2023. They weren't even talking about rate hikes at one point in time about this year, 2022. Now, obviously, that is a totally different, that's not going to happen. There's going to be several rate hikes this year. And Dudley says it's even going to go faster than what they've already kind of mapped out. So, you know, everybody's weighing in right now. Goldman Sachs, 4 rate hikes. And you wonder why we talk about the Fed so much. Well, look at the power that they have. They can sink, or they can put the wind in the face or the wind at the back of all these different asset classes. And I would also say this, that the higher risk asset classes, nobody really knew. I can remember not too long ago when people were saying that Bitcoin and the digital currencies were a hedge against inflation. And I was saying to myself, you know, I don't see that. I would categorize them as a high risk asset. Nobody really knows what is underlying that intrinsic value, if there is any. And it's mostly speculators. A lot of speculators are playing that area, which makes it a very high risk asset. And when you get a little turbulence in the market, or you get a big change in the interest rate environment, they too are in the firing line because they're high risk assets, and people want out of that stuff when they get nervous. So it remains to be seen, Barry. You know, a lot of these millennials and down the line actually have quit. The reason we have a labor shortage is they're not working in restaurants or delivering packages or whatever because they're at home trading Bitcoin. This is a major shakeout, okay? I saw the same thing in the year 1999. I can remember doing workshops. Hundreds and hundreds of people would show up, and we had gardeners, we had hairdressers, we had barbers, we had butchers, we had people from all walks of life showing up to one of Gunderson's workshops, because people were quitting their jobs and just buying, you know, Dell, buying America Online stock, and they thought they were geniuses, and they thought it would go forever.
Brocade.
Yeah. There was a massive, massive wipeout, and it cleaned everybody out, and barbers had to go back to cutting hair, and hairstylists had to go back to coloring hair, and everything like this and that. And it's just the way it was. And we kind of reached, especially in 2020, that was the height of it, because you were also home from COVID. You couldn't work. In a lot of cases, if you were a waiter or a butcher or a barber or a hair salon, you couldn't work because of COVID. So people
and it
were
was hard
playing.
To spend. It was hard to spend money, right? It was
yeah.
hard to spend money. You had the government sending money.
They kept sending you more yeah. money. Right. And what are you going to do? You're going to buy Bitcoin.
GameStop.
Or some lottery tickets. All right, we'll be right back with some serious talk. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show, where the market's kind of waiting for Powell's testimony today. I'm sure he'll have something to say. I'm sure he's going to bring up inflation, which that's obviously their biggest worry is inflation, and that's why they use monetary policy to get inflation under control, and the monetary policy tool that they use is interest rates. And when inflation got really, really, really bad back in the Jimmy Carter years and Gerald Ford years, it was out of control. And Paul Volcker, who was the Fed chairman back at that time, he raised interest rates. Now, I wasn't managing money at that point in time, but he raised interest rates like 1 point at a time.
He came in with a hammer.
With a hammer. And he hammered inflation, but it also hammered the markets. And then in the late 90s, you know, he had a pretty low interest rate environment again, and the market started taking off and went on a 10-year run. Or actually, the early 90s. And then in 2001, that all came to a screeching halt when the valuation, the asset bubble in the dot-com stocks was just extraordinary. And, of course, that collapsed. And all, like we were saying, all those, you know, hairdressers and plumbers and all kinds of folks. I had a great time at the workshops, just meeting people and talking to people. And there was so much excitement in the air. And we were talking. But I was also warning about the valuations that were, I mean, you had PEG ratios of 10, 5. It was nothing like we'd ever seen before. And it did not end well at all. And now, you know, this current bubble has mostly been built in the long duration stocks. And a lot of stocks went public that should have never went public over the last several years. And that's going to not be pretty, the unwinding of those stocks. And there are inverse funds. You know, there's an inverse SPAC ETF. Obviously, there's SARC, which is inverse ARC. I see Kathy Woods has moved her operation to Florida. I mean, who hasn't? Will anybody be left in New York City when it's all said and done? But she moved her operation just recently to St. Petersburg, where, gosh, you could hear our show from St. Petersburg down there. Anyways, a lot of people going to Florida, obviously, for obvious reasons. The tax, it's a tax migration. You know, we migrate for all kinds of reasons. There's population migrations, and the biggest, probably one of the biggest forces right now, restrictive governments and high taxes, and people are leaving that environment for, you know, lower taxes and a little more freedom. And I guess Florida, which without any state tax, is definitely attracting plenty of people down there. Okay, the inverse funds. You know, there's two ways to play this rising interest rate environment, and that's inverse ETFs. I see an article yesterday in the Seeking Alpha about inverse QQQ, which is PSQ. Double inverse QQQ is QID. Can you imagine if you'd have seen the year 2000 coming when the NASDAQ went down 80% and they had inverse funds back then? Well, that's what that one guy did. Paulson, is it Paulson that saw the meltdown in the
it's a guy from The Big Short. And,
yes.
And essentially he, you know, at that point he wanted to shorten, you know, mortgages, but didn't,
yes.
You know, there wasn't a vehicle to, so he had to go.
They made one
out,
for
yeah,
him.
Yeah. He had to go figure, you know, from bank to bank to get, you know, to take the other side of that trade and talk them into it. And they did. He almost probably bankrupted a couple of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and today as I get a thought, I say, boy, that's a good area to short. There are products. There's a lot of products now. For instance, Sogoo shorts that SPAC market. Yeah.
Michael Berry is his name.
Is
I should have known.
I should have known.
Well, he's in there. Yeah, he was part of it. There was a couple of guys doing it in different places at the same time. They just didn't know each other at the time, and they were both essentially trying to make the same type of product, with the same kind of thesis.
Yeah. Well, there's been hundreds and hundreds of these small biotechs that have gone public. I know because I add them to my app. And it was just like, oh, no, not another $100 million biotech. I mean, what are the odds that even one out of 25 maybe hits it someday? I talked to a guy that I know pretty well who's a veteran in that biotech industry. He says very few of these companies will be around 5 years from now. So there's inverse biotech ETFs. There's inverse the long bond, the U.S. Treasuries ETF. So there's a lot of different ways, but I think, looking at the short side of the high, long duration and looking at the long side of the short duration stuff. Okay, Kazakhstan, I got to mention that again. Chevron has huge investments there. And so you have U.S. interest right now in Kazakhstan. And by the way, Chevron's hitting a new 52-week high today, okay? Why? Because it has a low P.E., forward P.E. ratio, and it has a big fat dividend yield. That is the very, personification of a short-duration stock. You can immediately be getting a 4.3% dividend yield and big earnings, and you've got the prospects of oil continuing to go higher. The oil sector looks to be well positioned for this environment that the Fed has created. But anyways, back to Kazakhstan. Russia has landed troops in Kazakhstan to put down the uprising. The people want freedom. The government there is oppressive, and the government was like the first one that the Ukraine got, which was basically in bed with Putin, his little puppet running that country. But he has tremendous interest, Putin does, in Kazakhstan. The size of the country alone and the wealth of the oil and the gold and the uranium. Okay, the U.S. has interest there. I mean, we want freedom for the people. We don't want Putin's influence there, but obviously he's doing more about it than we are. We don't seem to be doing much at all about Kazakhstan. But now China has entered the fray.
Yeah, I was about to say China's very interested.
They share a 1,000-mile border with Kazakhstan. So, this may sound like a story that's, why are you interested? It has wide-ranging implications. You'd realize that Putin is trying to he's trying to get the gang back together again. When I was in high school, we had the USSR, the United Soviet Socialist Republic, and all of those countries were satellite countries of the USSR. Yeah, and until Reagan came along and said, tear down that wall, and, of course, it all started to unravel, and one by one these countries became free of Russian rule and independent, and Kazakhstan was one of those. But there's always, when you got all that oil, and it's corrupt. It's totally corrupt. You've got the elite running the country and raping the country of all of the riches of the country while the people have no freedom. They're sick of it. So that's going to be interesting to watch what goes on there. And then, of course, you've got Ukraine. If Putin were to get Kazakhstan and Ukraine back, now you've got a world superpower once again and what was once a very crippled a nation. Okay, man. Oh, these electric the EVs. Barry, let's invest in Rivian, XPeng, TuSimple, Volta, Mullen Automotive, Arrival, Nikola, Lordstown Motors. You know what? These were the darlings of 2020. I mean, these were the stocks. That's all you had to do was say, we're going public, we're a startup. We're going to go public through a SPAC, and we have a design on the boards for an electric truck. That's all you had to do. And the stock would fly. Now, you tell me that wasn't very similar to what took place in 2000 with the dot-com stocks. On the other hand, you've got Ford, GM, Toyota that dominate the automobile sector and trading at much lower multiples. The market is currently favoring by far the lower multiple stocks and continuing to pummel and thrash these long-duration startup EV and battery stocks. Okay, when we come back, a few things that are jumping off the page at us today. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Boy, it's really strange today. The leading asset class are the Chinese stocks. For whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, they've been under heavy, heavy, heavy pressure, really ever since China started to crack down on Hong Kong and Jack Ma disappeared and Alibaba stock has been crushed since then. They're having a good day today. I don't know if it's short covering or some news out of China, but I just can't bring myself to invest in China again. There was a time when, you know, they kind of had adapted capitalism and were kind of letting the guys create and gals and innovate and counterfeit, I suppose. Use a lot of U.S. technology to make Chinese goods. But then all of a sudden, they took a hard turn left, and it has not been good.
They wanted to gather all the information. It's like, yeah, we'll let you create a tech company, but we need you to send us all the info.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, that has not been a good thing. And I just can't bring myself to invest in Chinese stocks with any point in time they can come and crush you if they want to. Well, there's a few here. There's not much moving at all today, really. I mean, this market is totally on hold right now, awaiting today's Jerome Powell testimony, tomorrow's CPI report, Thursday's PPI report. But I think that the investment theme is in place for 2022. I really do. And I don't think it's going to change. The only thing that would change that theme would be for something big to come along and shut down our economy once again. And you would get, you know, interest rates to start to subside and the Fed to back off and whatnot. But right now there doesn't seem to be anything on the horizon to stop this current theme that is now in place. One stock that's standing out to me today is one we own, Vermilion Energy, VET, V-E-T. That's a smaller one. They are engaged in oil and gas exploration and development in Canada, Australia, France, Ireland, Germany, and the U.S. One thing I've noticed, the Canadian oil stocks are doing a lot better than the U.S. oil stocks. For whatever reason, I guess Canada realizes how important those oil stocks are to them and their economy. I mean, Canada's economy is very much dependent upon natural resources. And so the government, you know, backs off from clamping down. I mean, not to say that, you know, the Canadian oil sand stocks haven't had their issues and problems, but there seems to be a little bit better environment for the drillers, exploration companies in Canada. Vermilion is headquartered in Calgary, VET, home of the Saddle Dome up there in Calgary and the Calgary Flames. So Vermilion is, you know, the P.E. ratio on Vermilion right now is 4. And I would say that about a lot of the oil stocks, you know. If you want examples, we've given plenty of examples of long-duration stocks. We just went through a list of the EV companies, electric vehicle sector, which was one of the biggest bubbles in the market that was building during 2020 and early 2021 until it all came burst. Everything but Tesla. Tesla seems to have a Teflon around it and its valuation. But having said that, the oil stocks, many of them are single-digit P.E. ratios. ConocoPhillips is another one, COP. It's hitting a new, probably, well, 52-week high for sure today. Forward P.E. ratio of about 11, 10 or 11. And then there's another Canadian one. That's one of their big ones, Canadian Natural Resources, CNQ, which is headquartered in Calgary also, where that's, you know, kind of where the oil sands are. That's extracting oil out of the sand, which is a much different process from our fracking down here in the U.S. and a lot of shale. CNQ is a $56 billion company, P.E. ratio of 14, and a dividend of 3.9% dividend yield. There seems to be a real favoritism, too, Barry, being shown. We'll just close with this. On dividend-paying stock. You know, we ragged on these high dividend-paying stocks, and they were terrible investments for years. And now, all of a sudden, with everybody wanting short-duration stocks, they're looking at AbbVie and AT&T, high dividend payers. How does that dividend yield come into play in this whole valuation, the higher interest rate formula?
Well, it's interesting because it's almost counterintuitive because, you know, on one end, right, you get the cash now, which is the short duration side of it because they're paying a dividend, you know, every quarter or so,
yeah.
Right? But the, you know, the other side of it is usually, right, if you look at utility stocks, for example, who usually have a fairly steady dividend, they kind of act like a bond to a certain extent.
Do.
Yeah. And so when you look at those, normally in a rising rate environment, right, a utility doesn't do well because it's like a bond. So it's interesting, I think these companies that, you know, have potential for growth but also pay a dividend,
yeah,
right? So you're,
that's,
you know,
key.
Almost you're kind of you're kind of on the fence, if you will, a little bit between,
yeah,
you know, growth and I'm giving to give you some money back along the way. I guess that's, you know, could be a theme, but, you know, strictly, I'm going to pull up some later on today and look at some of the actual utilities and see how they've done, right, in terms of
the pure
utility.
Yeah, they've done very well. I mean,
I
they've done
they
okay
would.
Because they're on the safety side, but they
in
don't
real
have
estate,
growth.
You know, REITs and real estate are,
they've done,
you know,
well.
Especially, yeah, but the other side of it is rents, right? You know, things that pay rent, right? You know, usually those cap rates aren't as good in a rising rate environment. So it's kind of a very interesting dynamic right now,
yes,
between, you know, bird in hand, money in hand now, right, versus, you know, into the future and kind of how that dynamic's working together. But
yes, well, the app has come in very handy in separating the ones that the market is going after right now and the ones that the market is fleeing from right now. Well, you could get the newsletter. It was chock full of information on this whole new paradigm, really, that we have to deal with in the market right now. And I think Jamie Dimon kind of said it. You better learn to live with rising interest rates, and that also means learning to invest in a rising interest rate environment, which is a pretty unique environment that we haven't seen in a long time. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, or get the newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.